Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 107, interview with Kronda Adair. Kronda is the CEO of Carville Digital and also runs Working Websites, a course that helps business owners market themselves online. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, Kronda and I talk about the importance of documenting and systematizing your business processes, how she approaches her newsletter, what businesses get wrong about marketing, sources of motivation, and the four books every business owner needs to read. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/107. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a video production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/107. By doing so, you'll receive my two latest guides, DIY Documentary and Build Your Platform, as well as weekly inspiration and ways to increase your curiosity and wonder. All right, you ready for this interview with Kronda? Take it away, time traveler Chris. Kronda, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
My name is Kronda Adair. I'm the CEO of Carville Digital, and I also run Working Websites, which is a course to help business owners learn to market themselves online. I help businesses basically grow revenue using the internet and WordPress. So my goal is to take a company that I work with and double their revenue within 12 months.
That's awesome. How do you go about doing that? I mean, what's the secret to doubling revenue?
Well, the first thing is to actually focus on that as a goal in terms of the way we look at websites. A lot of the way that most people look at websites is as a digital business card or as something that, you know, needs to look pretty. And so my focus is really on ROI and using data to figure out how we can get your website to actually make you more money, meaning bringing in leads and customers and sales. And so rather than focus on, say, you know, a giant redesign project that you're not sure exactly what the outcome of that is going to be monetarily, right? Maybe you're for sure know, you know, your site's going to look better, but you're not sure what is going to actually resonate with your audience. And so rather than take that on in a giant chunk, I've really moved toward, you know, let's take one page, let's take your homepage, or let's take a landing page, and let's work on optimizing that to convert better. It's called the imperfect website system. And it's something that I've been on the edge of for a while, and then really crystallized for me through a Facebook ad that I saw actually for onthegridnow.com. And Jessica, like, she has a whole course on what she calls the imperfect website system. And so I've really adopted that as my mantra.
I think that's awesome, because oftentimes there's this pressure of making sure that the website's perfect before it's launched. Everything's got to be perfect. I imagine it takes a lot of pressure off being imperfect.
Yeah, and it's something, you know, you're one of my subscribers, so you know I've been sort of harping on people about perfection paralysis. And as a result of that, I sort of issued a challenge in the early summer to get people to actually do something, to take action towards their goals. And my version of that was I had been thinking about and wanting to relaunch my website for a long time. And so I said, okay, I'm going to relaunch my website on July 5th, which, by the way, is a terrible idea to relaunch your website the day after a holiday, because I did take the holiday off. And then I was, in fact, working on my website up until 11:59 on the day that I said I would do it. But it's out there and it's totally imperfect, but it's so much better than it was before. And now I can continue to improve it.
That's awesome. So you mentioned your newsletter, and I have to say that you produce one of the best email newsletters that I get, because it's full of insightful, actionable information. And I think what I love about it is your personality comes through as well. So how do you approach your newsletter?
I basically think to myself, who is screwing up this week that I want to save someone else from doing that mistake? Because I feel like, and I'm sure a lot of people feel like this, like nobody listens to me. You know, I'm out here sort of like on my podium trying to give people information and best practices. And sometimes it just feels like I'm shouting into the void. And so, you know, I'll look around at like what I'm most annoyed about that someone is doing that is really going to make future them unhappy. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, who can I save from this? Mm-hmm. And then I'll write about that. So that's a lot. At least this year, that's a lot of how I've been deciding. I think in the future, I'm really focused on producing my own content right now. And so I'm moving away from, you know, here's what I'm going to do to like actually doing things and then releasing them in small versions.
That's cool. So when you see things, are you like making notes on, oh, this would be great in the future newsletter? Do you like have a plan, or is it more of what you're seeing in, you know, the day-to-day livings of the digital world?
It's really day to day right now, and definitely the dream is to have a plan and to write them further into the future and schedule them further into the future. So it's probably not going to happen until next year. I'm going to take a break from the newsletter so that I can just kind of pause and think about 2018 and get ahead of that curve. And so there's probably going to be a lot of changes to the newsletter next year. Mm-hmm. And one of those will be having a plan, but I do have to get it done at least a few days earlier because now I have a virtual assistant who helps me. And so I only have to write the newsletter. And as long as I do that by my weekly deadline, then Dylan actually goes and schedules it and does all that stuff. So
nice. Was it a tough decision to get a virtual assistant and to start offloading some of the things from your brain and your schedule?
No, not at all. It's something I've been wanting to do for literally years. And I do work with an outsourcing company where they've discontinued this, but they had what's called a pay-as-you-go plan. So that meant I could send them any task anytime, and they would find the person on their team of like 50 different people who already had that skill and could do that task. So that was great because cool. I didn't have to worry about keeping someone busy for a certain amount of hours a week. Mm-hmm. I could just say, oh, I need this done. Really, it was just a question of resources, you know, for getting a dedicated VA, and they kind of made me a deal I couldn't refuse. And it's been great to have someone who's coming on who can actually learn the ins and outs of the business and how I do things. Mm-hmm. And so he's been helping me with a lot of my documentation and processes and sort of getting that all organized.
So how much of your day is devoted to learning? You just mentioned that you spend some time, you know, documenting your process, but do you spend a good amount, you know, learning new things and trying new things?
I don't have like, okay, this is the hour for learning. So Hannah, who's one of the team at Thrive Themes and ActiveGrowth.com, calls it just-in-time learning. So I try to, if I'm doing something, then I'm going to learn something that's relevant to that thing. So right now it's Facebook ads. So I'm learning about Facebook ads, and then I'm also documenting what I learn in a process as I go, because otherwise it's not going to happen. Yeah. So it's more about what is the pressing need in my business right now, and then I will read and consume content that's related to that.
I like that idea of not just in time learning, but documenting what you're learning. Cause I think so often, I know for myself, and I imagine I'm not alone in that, you read something and you're like, yeah, I got to remember that. And then you never do.
Yeah. It's the difference between finding information that's cool and actually integrating that information into your life and your work and your process. And so an example of that is, I listened to the Work the System podcast, which is done by the team from workthesystem.com, which is a great book. So I was listening to the podcast, and it was about how to become better at delegation. There's a whole method that they named called the SOLD method, which stands for specific, description, the objective, the limiting factors, and discussion. So you give someone a good description, you tell them why you want them to do the task, and then any limiting factors. Like, I want you to find this new software, but it can't be over $100 a month or something. And then discussion is, if they have questions, how should they contact you? Skype or email or phone or whatever. I listened to that. And then instead of just sort of going, oh, that's cool, and putting it away, I created a process in my process documentation. And then I made a text expander that basically lists out the headers for each thing and then drops the cursor into the first section. So when I'm assigning a new task to Dylan or anyone, I can just, you know, quickly drop in that framework, and that reminds me to include all those factors, and then I get a better result.
That's really interesting. Huh. So when I started following your newsletter, you had just begun the transition process from creating websites to becoming a digital marketing company. How has this transition process gone for you? Has it been a struggle? Has it been a good thing?
It's been both, as usual. You know, things worth doing are difficult. And so it's been both, for sure. And it's been really the whole of 2017 that I've been working on it. And so first I went to my clients and said, hey, this is where I'm moving towards, and this is what I want to be doing. And I really want, you know, that was my goal all along, honestly, is, you know, I started out selling, you know, WordPress support and maintenance, thinking, okay, I'll get people as my clients, and then I'll upsell them on actually growing their business with their website. And it turns out when you sell people code, that's all they want. So that didn't really work out. And so most of those clients went away near the beginning of the year. And then there's been a gap while I work on finding clients who are a better fit for what I want to be doing. And it's not that I never want to make a website again. Mm-hmm. It's just that I don't want to do it without knowing why we're doing it and what the goals are. So I will still make websites. I won't do it without strategy first. Mm-hmm. So we have to go through the discovery process. We have to know what the goals are, and we have to make our decisions based on those goals so that everybody's on the same page.
Why do you think a lot of companies don't go through that process and they just make things without a strategy?
I think mostly it's because they're fire killing. Mm-hmm. It's because they don't want to or can't think they can't take the time to actually slow down and say, hey, what is it we actually want the outcome of this to be? And what generally happens is that you end up wasting a bunch of time and a bunch of money and having to go back and do things over. And I've literally had clients who come to me and I'm like the third developer they've worked with, mm-hmm. and they've spent thousands of dollars, you know, just making, you know, I had one person who came to me and basically spent, you know, many thousands of dollars for what ended up being just like a couple of templates from ThemeForest that weren't even really, you know, finished out. So it feels unnatural. And when you're in a fire killing mode, it's really hard to do. But, you know, you'll hear a lot of successful people talk about slowing down to speed up. And I think that's really true, that you have to slow down and plan out, you know, what you want the result to be. Mm-hmm. Because then if you're, let's say you're a small business owner, you're thinking about hiring someone, yeah, you could get a result that's, I have a website and it's different than my old website. But what does that mean for your business? Is that actually doing your business any good? So if, you know, whatever you focus on is what you get. So if you just focus on, I want a prettier website, sure, you're going to get that, but you're not necessarily going to get the return on investment. So if your focus is, I want a website that converts and actually helps to grow my business, then you're going to get closer to that than you would otherwise. Hmm.
So have you always been interested in wanting to grow other people's businesses, or has this been a new development over the years?
I think before it was just a general desire to help people. And the way that I could do that was with tech, because that's what I went to school for. So, mm-hmm. you know, for a lot of people, just even getting the website up is a really big challenge. And so, you know, I definitely was helping people, but I made a lot of websites early in my career that we made them, we launched them, they sat there and didn't get much traffic, and then, you know, never got updated and eventually got hacked. And, you know, so it's like, oh, did I help them? Maybe a little. But at some point I started to think about, okay, sure, having a website is one thing, but what is it that actually makes websites valuable? And so that's when I really started to study marketing and sort of try to figure out the more valuable problem to solve.
So what do most businesses get wrong about marketing today?
I think they severely undervalue their website and what their websites could do for them. I did a slide recently where I did this, I went on one of those work calculators and figured out, like, if you hired an employee, then the average full-time employee can work about 2,000 hours a year, you know, with vacation and sick days and all that. And, you know, the average, any decent host is going to promise you 99% uptime for your website. And so if that works out, that's like, I don't know, I think it was 8,700 hours or something.
Oh, wow.
Great. So, you know, people, I think, would agree, if you hired a salesperson, you would want to train that salesperson to be the most effective they could be, but they completely ignore their website, which is there 24/7 all the time. And the more, once you optimize it to work better, you have that gain going forward. It's like compound interest. And so it just boggles my mind that people are very, very resistant to spending that time and making that investment to make sure it's working the best that it can be.
Mm-hmm. What's usually the one thing that people or companies need on their website that maybe isn't there that will do a better job to work for them?
Probably the simplest thing that someone could do right now is to add lead generation, basically an opt-in for getting someone's email address so that you can communicate with them in the future. Mm-hmm. Because most people who visit websites leave and they don't come back. Mm-hmm. And so if you can get their email address, then you can start a conversation with them to figure out, what it is they're interested in, how your product or service can help them, and start that conversation. And I would say most companies, most small businesses especially, are not doing any sort of lead generation and just putting up that opt-in and creating a basic funnel of like a welcome series to introduce people to your company and, ask them how you can help. Mm-hmm. Would they be miles ahead of most other people?
I like how you describe that too, because probably like yourself, read a lot of content that says email marketing is the untapped reservoir of success in a lot of ways. What you've just described though is you've taken that concept of email marketing and started to describe what that looks like.
Well, yeah, it's like I make an analogy a lot about going into a bike shop because I have a lot of bikes and, standing in front of the mountain bikes and being ignored. Like no one comes up to you. No one says, hey, can I help you? Like you would probably think, oh, service sucks here and walk out. And that's what a lot of people do. They get as far as like sign up for our newsletter and then they never communicate. And when someone does actually opt in, they're saying, okay, I'm interested enough in this to give you my precious email address, which is probably, people's inboxes are already too full. So if someone does that, it only makes sense that you would acknowledge that they did that and welcome them and start that conversation. And there's lots of automated ways to do that. It's not like you have to be trapped by your keyboard.
Yeah, that's cool. So you recently participated in the Pitch Black event at the Startup Week in Seattle. Can you share a little bit about what Pitch Black is?
Pitch Black is an event put on by Stephen Green, who I like to called the mayor of Portland Black Business. He can tell you all the stats about the number of Black entrepreneurs in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So he created this 3 years ago in Portland to kind of bring people together to showcase what's going on with Black entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. To give people a chance to earn a little money. So it's a pitch event where the audience votes on the winners, and the money that's distributed comes from ticket sales and donations and things like that. So they had the Pitch Black Portland for the third year, and then he's taking that on the road, and Seattle, I think, was his first stop. So I had the chance to travel up there a couple of weeks ago and participate in that as part of Startup Week Seattle. And it was a great experience. It was a full house and there were a lot of great pitches and just a lot of good connections that were made. Mm-hmm.
What kind of things did you learn as you were going through the pitch process?
You know, I don't, I'm not really interested in like pursuing sort of a venture capital mm-hmm. path for any of my businesses. And so I go to pitch events as really like a networking opportunity and sort of a chance to gain exposure. And so I'm not sure if I learned anything revelatory. I did get some good advice from my sister who lives in Seattle and came to see my pitch. So, you know, she gave me some good tips around just like phrasing and tone and things like that. But mostly I learned that Seattle has an awesome community going on with a ton of good ideas happening.
Yeah. I like your answer. And I like that you describe just, you know what you want when you're going into something like that, because a lot of people don't know what they want.
That's very true. A lot of people have no idea what they want.
You strike me as someone who every time you do something, you're going to have a measured response as to what you want out of that experience.
Yeah, and I've, you know, that's definitely been an evolving thing where I just really have to place my own value on my time and focus it in a really intentional way so that I make sure I'm going towards the things that I want to be moving towards.
Yeah. So how do you manage to do all that you do?
I definitely have systems in place. You know, I use Calendly for scheduling and I use Teamwork for project management. And I do just try to systemize as much as possible. And that's really the mission that I've been on for most of this year. And I'm running a book group of the Work the System book by Sam Carpenter with the Portland Startup Women Meetup that I'm a part of. And so in 2 weeks, we'll have our last meeting to kind of finish up the book. And then we'll start using our meetings really to start implementing some of that stuff. And so I think the difference between small struggling businesses and large successful ones, or even small successful ones, is really systemization. And the people who understand that and act on it are the ones who actually gain the freedom that everybody thinks they'll get when they start a business. I think, you know, what ends up happening is usually very different from the dream. But, you know, the things that I do manage to get done, which still doesn't feel like enough, I think it happens from whatever organization and systems I've managed to create up until this point, and I'm constantly working on improving them.
Yeah. So what are some of the things in your systemization process other than Calendly?
So I use System Hub to kind of store all my procedures and processes. And that's a recent find that one of my mentors turned me on to. And it's specifically designed to hold systems and processes. Before, I was using Google Docs and different things. And so one of the first things I had my virtual assistant do was just kind of move everything into the same place. That's a large part of it, is just not only creating those systems, but then remembering to go back and use them. So going into a task, for instance, I had a call yesterday with a colleague and I was recommending the outsourcing service that I use, which is called Outsourcing Angel. And he's actually in Australia where they're based. And so he wanted a recommendation. So I actually have a system that's how to recommend Outsourcing Angel to someone else. It has an email template that I can just paste in, add their first name and send off. And it takes me seconds rather than retyping that, you know, basically the same stuff over and over again. So really two parts, like systemizing things as I'm doing them. So, you know, as I'm learning about Facebook ads, I'm writing down all the major points that I want to be able to remember and all the resources that are going to be helpful, and then going back and using them.
Wow. That sounds great.
You know, I definitely see improvement from when I first started. You know, the reason most people don't do it is that it feels really overwhelming, but you just have to make it part of your process to keep working on it. And once you start to see the dividends of that, it's easier to be motivated.
Have you always been curious about systemization and process and data, a lot of the things that you've been talking about today?
No, it's really been since I started my business and since I started, you know, following other successful entrepreneurs and seeing the pattern that every one of them that's successful has systems. They document their processes. They, you know, it's like if you're trying to succeed at something, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can look at what other people have done and say, oh, okay, this is the roadmap. And so that's what really sparked my interest, is, you know, wanting to be able to run my business and not have it run me. And so now it's bordering on obsession. And I joke that I go around to business owners saying, you know, have you accepted documentation as your personal savior? Because once you get that mind shift, it's really hard. You can't unsee it. And so then in your day-to-day life, when you watch other people struggle, it's really obvious how this could help them. But everybody has to come to it, you know, in their own time.
Yeah. Apart from that, I mean, what keeps you motivated and moving forward each day?
My goals, mostly. Just I have a vision for what I want my life to look like and how I want my business to support that. And I'm definitely not there yet. So that's what keeps me motivated. I think a lot of people, and this is something I run into a lot too, a lot of people say that they want a certain result, but never really take action on it. And I think it's the disconnect between the result and the actual day-to-day habits that you need to get that result. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, I want this cool thing. You know, I want to be a rock star, but I don't want to actually practice every day. And so you have to be motivated by, and you have to, in some form, enjoy the process of getting to the result, or else, you know, you won't be able to keep going.
Yeah. When you are looking at other people doing the things that you want to be doing, who are some of the people that you've looked up to over the years?
Well, Troy Dean is probably, I call him my business boyfriend. He's the founder of WP Elevation, which is the largest consultancy and mastermind for WordPress consultants. And so I've been a member of that for a little over 2 years. And really, he was a large part of the transformation of just learning, like, how to run a business efficiently and how to start getting better projects and better clients. And I think the community is something around 800 wow. WordPress professionals worldwide now. And so it's just a really amazing group to be a part of, where you can have hundreds of people who are on paper competitors, just really motivated to help each other succeed. That's been a huge one. Who else? I actually have a post on my blog that I'll send you for the show notes.
Okay,
and it's like how I learned to run a successful business. And you know, I started following people like Brennan Dunn, who does Double Your Freelancing. And I'm totally blanking on some other names, but really just, you know, I think it, and it's kind of a trail, right? Because all these people kind of know each other and they're in the same orbit. And so you find one of them and you start going and encountering and pulling on the thread, basically. Oh, someone recently that I've started following is Bushra Azar. She does the Persuasion Revolution.
Ooh.
And so she basically teaches people about how persuasion works and using brain science basically to persuade people. So I'm learning a ton from her. I mentioned On the Grid Now, and I can never remember Jessica's last name, maybe because my wife's name is Jessica. So I'm like, I can only hold the one. You know, I saw her Facebook ad just float through my stream, and it was about, you know, getting your website to work. And I was like, oh, I'm all about that. Let's see what she has to say. And she just has a great, it's called The Definitive Guide to Getting Your Website to Work. And it's such a great thesis that is everything I would ever want to say about the way we make websites, why it's broken, and what you should do instead. So that's been a huge influence.
So what is one book or resource every creative professional should read?
I'm going to have to break the rule on this question because there's four. So I've already mentioned Work the System, which is kind of my business Bible right now. Another great one is Traction, Getting a Grip on Your Business by Gina Wickman. Yeah. Another great one that I just read in the last couple of weeks is Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. Mm. So basically it's a pay yourself first guide for business owners. Mm-hmm. And what's my last one? Start with Why.
Okay.
Simon Sinek. So I feel like if someone was like, I'm going to start a business, and you read those four books, you're going to be like just so far ahead of the game from people who probably have had businesses for 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
that haven't read those books. You know, even if you feel like it doesn't apply to you yet, it would really, really give you a great grounding in how business works.
Wow. You've taken in so much information over the years. Thank you for sharing it all, because it sounds like you're constantly taking things in.
And I've taken in a lot, but I also am now trying to implement the things that I've taken in to actually reap the benefits and have my clients reap the benefits. So, when I'm working with clients now, I'm starting to do, helping them do some systemization, at least as it relates to, their tech, making sure that we document, here's how the website works, here's how the custom features that we may have built, and doing either video guides or written documentation or both for that, because I think that's one of the most valuable things that I can do.
So, what are you excited about today?
I'm excited about working websites. I actually just posted, if you read this Sunday's newsletter, I posted one of the first lessons up on workingwebsites.co. So working websites has its own site now, and I'm working on a mini course that's going to
Cool.
be just like a standalone thing that's going to launch at the end of this month. And then I'm actually meeting with one of the it used to be the Portland Development Commission, and now it's Prosper Portland. Meeting with them to talk about doing a deal for them to sponsor creating the rest of the content for the course, and having some of the organizations in the Inclusive Business Network have access to that material. So that's what I'm most excited about, because I've really wanted to have a product for at least the last 2 years, and it's just been a struggle to get the time and the resources to get it done. So that's my singular focus right now, and anything that's not that, or working with the clients I already have, is on the back burner.
That sounds super cool.
Yeah, I'm just really tired of getting clients who come to me and they don't own their domain name. Because that's the so if you go to the site and you go to the workingwebsites.co blog, that's the first thing that's up there, because I'm like, okay, this is a thing that really, if you ask me like what motivated this, it was that. It was like people are so tech phobic, or so, don't understand the implications to letting someone else own your online business, thinking like, oh, I'll just let the developer do that because, they're technical. And it's like, no, man, you wouldn't let your real estate agent sign the papers for your house. Like, that's yours. You have to own it. So that's the first lesson I put up, and more to follow.
That's great. So I have a final question for you.
Yes.
What is it about the Elevator Cafe egg sandwich that you can't get enough of?
I'm pretty sure it's the aioli. They put this sauce on there and it just gives it this little bit different flavor. And the bacon's always really crispy and the croissants are always really flaky. And just between all those three things, I'm just like a super addict. So if anyone's listening to this and wants to donate to my egg sandwich habit, please feel free.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was funny. I was reading your newsletter and I got to the bottom and I'm like, wait a minute. Elevator Cafe egg sandwich. That sounds delicious.
It's really good. I literally have not ordered anything else. I've been going up there for probably a good 5 months. I have yet to order anything else. Well, I've ordered, like, they have really good cookies too, but I haven't ordered like an alternative entree.
That's awesome. Well, Karana, thank you so much for taking time to be on Getting Work to Work. I have learned so much from you. You have no idea. So I just appreciate your time and your willingness to share. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.